Well, good afternoon, listeners. This is the DOS program. We are the Council for the Defence of Government Schools, and we're here to promote and to defend public education. And we tell you every week, or try to, that that is education that is public in purpose and outcome. But above all, it is public in access. It's accessible to all children and all teachers, all cleaners, all principals, all staff that are employed there. In this, it differs greatly from the private sector, as we've been finding out in the last few weeks. But it also is owned by the public, or it should be, and controlled by the public, as it should be. It is the only one that is publicly accountable, and for all of these reasons, it is the only system that should be publicly funded. The DOGs have never compromised on their position that there should be no state aid to any private school in Australia, and our position that there should be separation of religion from the state. Now, we've got a press release 969 up on the website today. Private schools, which are awash with public money, and also endowments and donations, are now poaching public school staff. There is a teacher shortage throughout Australia, and the public sector is in trouble because the private sector has the money to buy out teachers. Not all of them, of course, are for sale. Public education people are well known for not being for sale, but some people have to pay the mortgage and pay the bills. So the private schools are in the market buying teachers. And Kim is going to tell us about this. Over to you, Kim.
Thank you, Jean. The private school system is a parasitic system dependent upon the main public system and public funding for teacher training, curriculum development, and, by virtue of expulsion policies, boasting an exclusive enrolment image. Australia's falling results in international performance tests are evidence of the parasite's effects upon the host. The diversion of essential public funds away from the public into the private system is bringing both systems into trouble. The latest evidence of the parasitic nature of the private system has been highlighted by the teacher shortages throughout Australia. The private schools, especially the wealthy, exclusive schools, are using their superior public funding and endowments to poach teachers out of the public system. The Australian Education Union has continued to hear reports from AEU principals of private schools across Victoria poaching teachers from the public school system amid the current staffing shortage crisis. Many private schools are able to pay salaries that outstrip those in the public system. Work done by Trevor Kobold from Save Our Schools refers to huge donations and endowments, as well as generous public funding enjoyed by the private sector. New figures obtained from the Australian Charities and Not-for-Profits Commission, ACNC, show that 44 Victorian private schools received nearly $300 million in donations and investment income over 5 years from 2017 to 2021. Donations totaled $215 million and investment income was $84 million. Just 9 schools received $175 million over the period. The average income from these sources was $6.8 million per school over the 5 years. Each of the 44 schools received more than $1 million over the 5 years. 5 other schools received over $10 million: Wesley College, $10.8 million, Ivanhoe Graver, $10.6 million, Biolit College, $10.2 million, Corowa, $10.1 million, and Xavier College, $10.1 million. Donations and investment income of these wealthy exclusive schools dwarf other private income of public schools. The average such income of Victorian public schools in 2020 was $179 per student. By contrast, the donations and investment income of Melbourne Grammar was $5,055 per student and $5,784 per student at Geelong Grammar. These 44 private schools received $484 million in funding by the Commonwealth and Victorian governments in 2020. This funding was determined without regard to their donations and investment income. And Dale has some facts and figures that she's going to cover in the next segment to illustrate this further. According to the ABC, in the past 12 months, jobs advertised in inner city private schools have offered base salaries of up to $160,000, and rural principals have reported high offers in the regions too. Those salaries are tens of thousands of dollars higher than what the state system can offer most teachers. In New South Wales, a state school classroom teacher's base salary tops out at 113,000, and in Victorian schools, it is 112,000.
Now,
Some
these are very
teachers.
interesting figures. The private schools can offer 160,000. The state schools can offer at the most 113 or 112,000. But in days gone by, before state aid, the private schools used to have teachers who were underpaid and they were not very well qualified either. This was well known. And of course, the Catholic system had slave labour. Their brothers and nuns weren't paid at all. So the situation has changed in the last 50 years, right around to the fact that the private system can now offer more than a third more salary, almost somewhere near 40% more in salary. It's really quite extraordinary, and it shows you the effects of state aid to private schools on the whole system of Australia. As well as, of course, all of the social spin-offs, the exclusion and the segregation and the sectarianism in our society. But please tell us more, Kim.
Absolutely. Some teachers will be able to top up their salaries through bonus and retention mechanisms, but with Australia facing an unprecedented teacher shortage, public school principals have told the ABC they still cannot compete on pay and conditions. Regional schools in particular are losing teachers. John Frayne, the principal at Traralgon Secondary College in Victoria's Gippsland region, said several teachers had come to him asking for more money, having been offered higher salaries to work at local private schools. He said he could not match the offers. "We're certainly not as free as private sector schools would be to offer higher salaries," he said. Mr. Frayne said his school was between four and six teaching positions short at the end of 2022. While shortages at Traralgon have been filled by relief teachers lured via state government-funded bonus payments, other principals are turning to teaching students to fill the gaps. Fellow regional principal Wodonga Middle Years College Marie Cribbs said she had recently lost a staff member to a private school, making her 13 positions short ahead of the school new year. "Actually finding qualified teachers is not possible at the moment," she said. Ms. Cribbs said at the end of the last year, the Victorian school employed eight teaching students in the final year of their qualification to fill the gaps. More senior staff are becoming burnt out because they're having to mentor and support the younger staff in the school who often have had very little or no experience in schools, she said. "We've had to combine classes to make bigger classes, with students having different teachers, students having inexperienced teachers," she said. "Principals have never seen anything like this," Mr. Frayne said. "The fact that private schools get significant government funding on top of their student fees enabled them to pay higher wages to attract teachers. What they receive from the government would be 60 to 70% of my total budget, so the federal funding provides them with a greater capacity to pay staff," he said. And while the Victorian Public Schools Enterprise Agreement does allow teachers to earn an extra $10,000 as a retention incentive, Mr. Friend said it was not a realistic solution because paying the bonus to every teacher would make school budgets unworkable.
And
Mr.
this
Friend
is
said
part of
he.
the problem too, of course. The principals have been given a lot more responsibility, and a lot of people don't want the position. How would you like to be in Mr. Frayne's position, having to run a very big school out there in the regions by yourself, with a limited budget and your schools being poached by the local private schools? What a job.
Yeah,
What a job.
certainly overwhelming.
Yeah, it would be quite, yes, quite demanding.
Mr. Frayne said he had never seen anything like this in his 34 years in the profession. Federal government acknowledges real issue. A Victorian Education Department spokesperson said it was already doing all it could to retain teachers and to entice retired teachers back to the profession. The department has offered thousands of dollars in bonuses for 150 roles in hard-to-staff and regional schools around the state, like Traralgon Secondary College. It has also offered cash for 100 teachers to relocate from overseas into hard-to-staff schools, while the Commonwealth has prioritised qualified teachers as part of its expanded skill migration program. Meanwhile, New South Wales Minister for Early Learning Sarah Mitchell defended the latest public schools enterprise agreement, which delivered a 3% pay rise for teachers from June last year. She also pointed to the excellence in teaching reform being led by Melbourne University expert John Hattie, which could see the top 10% of teachers being paid salaries on par with school deputy principals. However, Ms. Mitchell conceded public schools were underfunded according to the allocations set out in the Gonski funding agreements. Ms. Mitchell called in on the current federal government to increase its contribution in the next five-year funding deal for both public and private schools. In December, the Albanese government announced it would extend the current funding agreement by 1 year to allow time for a funding review. It means the government's in-principle commitment to lifting government funding for public schools will be delayed for another year, which unions say will mean public schools continue to lose teachers to the private sector. Federal Education Minister Jason Clare has acknowledged the scale of the problem. "This is a real issue. Principals and teachers have both talked to me about this," he said. Mr. Clare agreed pay is more important, but said fixing entrenched equity problems would take time and money. AEU Victorian Branch President Meredith Peace said these reports are extremely concerning, with this practice exacerbating the already serious staffing challenges faced by the state's public schools. "This is causing considerable stress and workload for principals and puts at risk the right of every child to have a qualified teacher in their classroom and/or access certain parts of the curriculum," says Ms. Peace. "What we are seeing here highlights the current inequity that exists between public and private schools. Victoria's public schools are only funded to 90% of the federally determined resource standard, whilst the majority of private and Catholic schools are already at or in excess of 100%. This means public schools are not operating on a level playing field, and students are missing out on aspects of the education they are entitled to, thus diminishing their educational opportunities. It should therefore come as no surprise that private schools are able to use their abundant resources to offer financial incentives and opportunities that public schools have no capacity to match." Dogs note that the current situation was predicted by their organisation in 1964. The overwhelming greed of the parasitic religious sector, together with the privatisation policies of both Labor and coalition governments since the 1980s, have led to an emptying of the public treasury in favour of the wealthy and sectarian at the expense of the poor and vulnerable. The only way forward is to abandon a failed policy and adhere to a policy of no state aid for private schools and separation of religion from the state. Back to you, Jean.
Well, thank you very much, Kim. That was a pretty meaty press release that you've just read out to the public, and we've thrown a few facts and figures at you. We'll have a bit of a break before Dale throws a few more very specific facts and figures into the mix.
Did you know that 3CR received its community radio licence in 1976?
Our application was successful because of our diverse and engaged community membership.
Subscribers are at the heart of our station, and we really need you to be active and paid up in 2023.
Become a 3CR subscriber today.
Call 03 8377 or subscribe online at 3cr.org.au/subscribe.
It's all about a voice in our own country. We've got a reason to be screaming out, where's our voice in this country? You know, not that I want to be a part of the Constitution for that, you know. That's why 3CR is so important to me and this community here. We've got a voice, but it's not, you know, we're entitled to a bigger voice than what we've got. But it's all about having a voice.
Subscribe to 3CR, fiercely independent and community controlled. Go to 3cr.org.au/subscribe or call the station on 03 9419 8377.
Well, we hope that you're listening to the Dogs program still, because we've got some very, very insightful information that has come out of the Charities Commission. The Charities Commission at least collects data. In these days of data collection, some of these figures are mouthwatering. I'm looking here at donations for Melbourne Grammar of 26,679,820,000, and an investment income of over 16 million from 2017 to 2021. So the total of their just endowments, if you want to call it that, is 43 million. And they had, as well as that, on top of their 43 million, and this is their very extensive fees as well, they've got government funding of over 8 million, and the fees for students at that school are 29,000, nearly 30,000. And the number of students in the top SEA quartile, that's the wealthiest families in the nation, is 95%. These are the schools that have got the money to buy the teachers. Dale, tell us a few more.
Well, there's so many, as you say. Geelong Grammar, just in donations alone, gets 16,346,000. Then in its investment incomes, and this is just from a four-year period, 15,705,000.
That means it's a tremendous number of assets, you know, that they get income from.
Yeah.
Their endowments must be phenomenal to get this kind of money. Yes.
The total is $32 million, and that's before the government funding, of which they get $13,157,323. And the fees for each student are $20,198. And of course, students in the top SEA, which is the socio-educational advantage, not just economic but educational, they've got 91% of students in that highest bracket of educational advantage. Then you've got Scotch College, which, oh my goodness, you know, 30 million.
Scotch College is just amazing, isn't it? Yeah, look at it.
$30 million in donations alone. Says that it's got $1,231,000 in income investments, but so the total, they've got $31,385,460.
That's before they get any fees. That's just on top of everything.
Yes. Yeah, and that's before they get $7 million in government funding, and these for each student are $31,407. And again, students with a socio-educational advantage, 97%. So these are schools that are getting incredible amounts of public funding that absolutely do not need it. They're not taking on the heavy lifting of disadvantaged students. They're not taking on the heavy lifting of students with disability. You know, these are very, very well-heeled families. It's mind-boggling. Like, the list goes on. You can find this at the Save Our Schools website, where Trevor Kobold has put together a mind-boggling list of donation and investment income. Of, you know, they're just raking it in. Caulfield Grammar is getting $10 million in donations, and in investment, it's got over $6.5 million. So their total is $16,988,838. That's before they get $19 million in government funding, and their fees per student, $26,000. So, and it goes on and on. And I wish I could say the figures got better, but they don't. And the government investment in these schools is just mind-boggling when you think that public schools are not even getting 90% of the schooling resource standard. These schools are getting over and above 105% of the schooling resource standard as decided by the Gonski panel in 2011.
Well, what I find of interest is that it's the boys' schools that are really, really, really well heeled that have got not only donations, because remember, the people who give donations to these schools then get taxation exemptions for that money. But you've also got investment income, which is mind-boggling, which means that they have a lot of endowments, and they also have real estate that they're making money from, which is not counted and never has been counted in any official data or calculation for what sort of money these people should get. Some of the girls' schools, though, are very interesting. Melbourne Girls Grammar here. What do they get?
They've got $4,983,000 and $324 in donations. It says they've got $39,000 in investment. So their total comes to around $5 million. But then that's before they get $8 million in government funding, which just tops it up. So yeah, Melbourne Girls Grammar, again, it costs $29,700 to send a pupil to this school. And again, the pupils are coming from socio-educationally advantaged backgrounds. That 96% of the students come from the highest socio-educationally advantaged quartile. It's just entrenched inequity.
Well, what's even more interesting is that Melbourne Grammar, which has the greatest income over and above whatever the state school gets, their share of the SRS under Gonski is not even 100%, it's 107%. There's something not just mind-boggling, but completely out of whack morally about it.
Something rotten.
yes, something rotten in the educational government of this country.
Absolutely.
Well, look, thank you very much for all these facts and figures. If people want to find out more, they can go to our website or the Save Our Schools website, where Trevor Coble has done a terrific job in exposing these facts and figures. They are official figures from the Charities Commission website, and we're always very interested on this program to give you the facts and figures. But we'll have a little bit of a break and we'll come back to something a little bit less demanding.
ThreeCR is radical radio.
Through our on-air content and community structure, we promote real change for workers' rights, gender equality, environmental action, disability justice, and on racism and First Nations sovereignty.
Do you want to be part of real radical change?
We need you to subscribe. It's just $40 concession, $80 waged, $150 for a band or organisation, and $300 solidarity.
Call 03-9419-8377. That's 9419-8377. Or subscribe online at 3cr.org.au/subscribe.
Teachers have had their qualifications, their pay, their pensions and their working conditions attacked relentlessly by this government.
I'm the proud product of a government-funded primary school education and of a government-funded secondary school education.
Australia is one of the richest and luckiest countries in the world, and there's no reason whatsoever why we can't have the very best public schools in the world.
It's still not good enough that kids with disability miss out.
Our education is not for profit. Our education is not for profit.
You're listening to The Dogs, the defence of government schools on 3CR.
Well, now we've got an article that appeared in the Sydney Morning Herald. Up in New South Wales, but also in Victoria, in recent years, parents have taken the hype from the private schools and the enormous amounts of money, of course, that they're getting from the taxpayer and also from their endowments. And they've noted these, and they are sending their children to these schools rather than to public schools, if they have even the possibility of the money. Of course, the interest rates have not yet really struck them, so things might be a bit different by the end of this year. But this is a very interesting article that Maddie's going to read for us. Over to you, Maddie.
Thanks, Jean. Yes, this article is by Lucy Carroll and Christopher Harris, and it is entitled Parents Flock to Private Schools Amid Public System Exodus. Parents are sending their children to the state's independent schools in record numbers. While the share of students enrolled in public schools has plunged to its lowest level in 15 years. There were thousands fewer students enrolled in New South Wales public schools last year, as families increasingly opted for a private education. Official data released on Wednesday showed that 63.7% of New South Wales students attended public schools in 2022, a fall from 65.5% 5 years ago. the proportion of students in independent schools has surged to 15.1%, up from 13.3% in 2017. Catholic schools have remained relatively steady, with their share of students rising slightly to 21% in 2022. Families flocking to new housing developments on the city's fringe are partly behind the surging enrolments in new and low-fee independent schools, according to Helen Proctor, a professor of education at University of Sydney. The new private schools are marketing themselves well, and the price point is really attractive to parents. These schools are also heavily subsidised by public funding, unlike the older and wealthier schools, she said. The exodus of students from public schools is a longer-term trend that has occurred while the number of private schools with fees between 5,000 to 10,000 has grown, said Glenn Fahey, an education research fellow at the Centre for Independent Studies. He also said, it comes as little surprise to see an increasing flight of parents to private schools. This is a trend that has been going for some time. Minister for Education and Early Learning, Sarah Mitchell, said the government supported parents' freedom to choose which school they enrolled their children in. We also support the growth of low-fee, non-government schools in high-growth areas through capital funding, she said. Figures released by the Australian Bureau of Statistics show the state's independent school enrolments grew by 6,570 in a year to reach 187,913, which is the highest on record. Association of Independent Schools New South Wales Chief Executive Marjorie Evans said enrolment growth had occurred in low and mid-fee Anglican, Islamic and Christian schools in Sydney's newer suburbs. Demand for places in many independent schools exceeds supply, and schools report having scores of names on their waiting lists, and in some cases, hundreds of students are turned away, Evans said. Sydney's private schools, many of which have increased fees by 4 to 7% this year, have been lobbying to increase student caps, with principals warning restrictive student caps are creating huge enrolment pressures. The ABS figures reflect a national trend, with independent schools across Australia recording the highest growth rate at 3.3% last year, followed by Catholic schools at 1%. Enrolments in government schools fell for a second year running, down by 0.6% across the country. Eloise Roberts, head of education statistics at the ABS, said the proportion of students enrolled in independent primary schools was growing, with about 12% of New South Wales students in private primary schools. This increase in the primary school share for independent schools has been continuing over a few years, she said, noting that these proportions are much higher for high school, with 18.5% of secondary students in New South Wales independent schools. Across all schools, private schools had a lower student-to-teacher ratio, 11.7 students to one teacher, than government schools, which are 13.4 students to one teacher, and Catholic schools, 13.6 students to one teacher. Principal Alan Dawson at Richard Johnson Anglican School in Oakhurst said demand was increasing for low-fee private schools in high-growth areas in the city's northwest. Our fees are about $6,400 for Year 12. Parents really see it as a value for money, Dawson said. Even just in the past year to this year, we've seen a 44% increase in a year at our Marsden Park campus. This is mainly due to a lack of public schools in this growth corridor, Dawson said. Leppington Anglican College Principal Michael Newton's school in southwest Sydney opened its doors this year and already has 180 students. We've got kids who have come from other public schools in the area, he said. There are some big open learning style classrooms. For some parents, their children have found that difficult. He said parents who enrolled their children at the $8,000 a year school valued how staff used explicit instruction to explain academic concepts to children and the attention they received from one classroom teacher. In our area, parents say they want a disciplined environment, he said. Nikki Capsanis, who lives in Earlwood, chose Rosebank College for her children, Jonas and Alexis. The Five Dock Private School charges $11,400 for Year 12, This is significantly below amounts charged at Kambala and SCEGGS Darlinghurst. The most expensive Sydney schools where fees have increased beyond $45,000 for the first time this year. So ridiculous. For us, the school is up there with the elite schools, but not with the cost, Capsanis said. The co-educational factor was a big plus, and it offers academics, performing and arts. We think the fees are worth it. The kids went to our local public primary school, but for high school, we wanted a private education. As children get older and they become teenagers, they need discipline. ACU senior lecturer and former principal Paul Kitson said there can be a misguided view that there is major academic benefit to sending children to private schools. There are many reasons parents select independent schools, including social status, religious affiliation, and family connections. It will be interesting to see what happens with enrolments in low-fee schools as mortgage and cost of living pressures grow, he said, adding that high-fee schools will be relatively insulated. Iris Nastasi, principal at Rosebank College, said the school was accepting applications for 2028. We are oversubscribed and there is no slowing down in enrolments, she said.
Yes, well, thank you, Maddie, but unfortunately, though, all those poor parents flocking to private schools are being sold a pup, as we'll find later in this program, because if NAPLAN results mean anything, the results on the board are for state schools, not for the private schools at all. But we'll hear more about that later. We're going to have a bit of a break now, and Sol is going to take us to the Nordic countries.
Are you a 3CR subscriber?
We really need our listeners to subscribe to the station. It helps us remain financially independent and is an important part of our community governance.
It's just $40 concession, $80 waged, $150 for a band or organisation, and $300 solidarity.
Become a 3CR subscriber today.
3CR, Radical Radio.
Are you a 3CR subscriber?
We really need our listeners to subscribe to the station.
Call 03 9419 8377 or sign up online at 3cr.org.au/subscribe.
Well, we hope that you're still listening to the Dogs program, and if you want to find out more about all the facts and things we've been talking about, then you can go to our website at www.adogs.info. But the Australian Education Union had a very interesting article on their website this week, and Sorrel's going to tell us about it. It's from a TAFE teacher, What Can We Learn from Vet Teaching in Nordic Countries? Where, of course, they, even in Norway, the king's sons and daughters go to a state school. Over to you, Sorrel.
Thanks, Jean. So this article was written by Dr. Karen O'Reilly Briggs, originally for the Australian Education Union. As an advocate of TAFE teachers, Karen has an enormous amount of respect for the vet teaching profession, those who have mastered their crafts over a lifetime before turning their hand to teaching and giving back to their trade. However, the apparent unwillingness of education leaders to do what is needed to raise the status and standing of vocational education in society, including elevating the status and the standing of the vet teaching workforce, is a crucial failure that will have a long-lasting impact on future generations. Until early 2021, she was the course coordinator of the only initial teacher education university program in Australia, specifically designed to recruit and upskill tradespeople to become qualified vet and technologies secondary school teachers. To her lament, the course did not survive the COVID-19 pandemic, and along with its closure came the loss of opportunity for tradespeople to gain a professional vet and technologies secondary school teaching qualification in Victoria. Now, she could talk for a long time about why the closure of this program is problematic, but if she boils it down to three areas of particular concern, A would be the quality of vet teaching and learning available in the schools, B, opportunity for vet trainers to gain a secondary teaching qualification, and C, the low status of vet in society. Although vet schools or VET delivered to secondary school students has been around since the mid-1990s. To date, Australia has been unable to create a sustainable or productive enough way of producing the quantity of ITE or teacher-qualified VET secondary teachers needed to resource the nation's secondary schools. In fact, teacher-qualified VET teachers are so rare today, they are literally referred to as an endangered species by the national authority responsible for teaching standards, the Australian Institute for Teaching and School Leadership. At this point, someone usually reminds her, Karen, that VET trainers are able to work in schools so long as they have a special authority or permission to teach, PTT. PTT is something school principals can call on in times when they can't find suitably qualified teachers to teach their programs. It enables them to employ non-qualified teachers, trainers, to fill in during times of teaching skill shortages. PTT is supposed to be implemented only on the proviso that the candidate can demonstrate that they are enrolled in and working towards a full teaching qualification. Today, however, at least in Victoria, these rules have been changed so that VET trainers no longer need to demonstrate that they are enrolled in a secondary teaching qualification. In fact, VET teachers are so rare that they have been given their own special category of PTT. But given the importance of VETIS programs, VETIS, to the nation, it is worth considering why it is that VET school teachers are so rare.
It's because it's been run down for years and years and years, and trades have been always second rate way back into the time of the tech schools, which used to do marvellous things. But it's not like this in Finland and Norway, is it, Sol?
No, it's not like
they make these kind of mistakes.
Yeah, so Karen tells us that one of the most striking differences between Australia and the Nordic countries is the high level of respect and social regard afforded to VET education and VET teaching staff more generally. VET upper secondary teachers are not only industry experienced, many hold craft or journeyman trade qualifications, but they are highly educated as well. Finland and Norway are world famous for their social equity, high rankings in the OECD's Program for International Student Assessment, PISA, scales, free education systems, and the high levels of trust and respect afforded to their teaching workforces. There is a strong commitment to lifelong learning, and their education systems have been carefully designed so that there are no dead ends. In Finland, the teaching profession is revered and teachers hold what has been described as heroic status, in part due to the important role they have played in history, helping to establish Finland's independence and the formation of Finnish national identity. Both Finland and Norway have upper secondary VET pathways that are well established and an integral part of their secondary schooling systems. VET secondary school teachers in these countries not only enjoy high levels of education and social status on par with their academic counterparts, but also receive the equivalent pay, conditions, and professional opportunities as general academic teachers in schools. Australia would also do well to take note of the popularity of VET in schools in Norway. Today, over half of all Norwegian upper secondary school students, 51%, choose to study a VET pathway to the workforce, making VET in schools more popular than academic pathways to university. Quite an achievement.
Which is actually where Australia has failed dismally. We believe that somehow one has to go to university to even get into the job market these days almost. But we're crying out for good tradesmen. And with our housing shortage, this is... really a rather dreadful thing, isn't it? Well, Sorrel, what can Australia learn from the VET teaching education in Nordic countries, do you think?
Yeah, so Karen tells us that as a country presently reeling from teacher shortages, that we would do well in Australia to learn from Finland, where VET teachers are so highly respected that only 20% of applicants are accepted into teacher education courses. And further, as the nation struggles to encourage more young people to pursue VET in schools as pathways to the workforce, we might like to stop and consider why it is that VET is so popular in Norway and that the majority of young people supported by their parents purposefully choose to study vet ahead of academic pathways to university. Although Karen's fellowship report is still in progress, it is fair to say that Australia has a lot to learn from our Nordic friends when it comes to high quality vet in schools. These countries clearly value education and value their vet teachers so much so that they have implemented specialist teacher education programs that encourage, not stifle, vocational professionals from not only gaining a professional teaching qualification, but achieving the same opportunities and levels of prestige as general teachers in schools. Thanks. Back over to you, Jean.
Yes, well, that was very interesting. And this Karen O'Reilly brings this article we got from the Australian Education Union website is attached to the Victoria University as an adjunct fellow, and she's secretary of the Australian Vocational Education and Training Association. But, yes, I think that that is very, very interesting indeed. Australia is falling behind the rest of the world, and we need to learn from others, particularly the Nordic countries. But we'll have a bit of a break and we'll come back with our good news stories.
Therese Virtue here from Music Sans Frontières. Subscribe to 3CR for music programs dominated by Australian artists, supporting Australian music making and lifting your day with glorious sound. 3CR is a membership-based organisation. We depend on our members' support. That's why we make it so easy to subscribe. Call 9419 8377 or go online to 3cr.org.au.
Well, most of today on the Dogs program, we hope you're still with us. We've had some rather sad stories for supporters of public education, but we always like to end up on a positive note. And there is some really, really interesting information. In spite of the fact that our public schools and our public school teachers are under tremendous pressure with not enough funds to run the systems, and our principals are tearing their hair out because their teachers are being poached by the private sector. And the parasitic sector, the private sector is diverting so much funding away from our public schools. Our public schools are still doing better than the private sector when it comes to testing. In other words, the NAPLAN tests show that our public school teachers are in there with their disadvantaged children, teaching them to read, write, and do arithmetic and quite a few other things as well. And they are doing very, very well, much, much better than the private schools. And here we have Dale to tell us about it. And then, of course, we have our great state school.
Thanks, Jean. This is an article from Last Wednesday's Age by Adam Carey and Nicole Presell. State schools dominate list of NAPLAN high achievers. The schools with Victoria's most improved NAPLAN results over the past 4 years has been revealed, and government schools make up 16 of the state's top 20 performers, alongside 4 schools in the independent and Catholic sectors. Schools with a high proportion of students from first-generation migrant families also dominated the list of high achievers. Between 60% and 90% of students were from non-English-speaking backgrounds in every school in the top 10. 2 of the 4 non-government schools in the top 20 are low-fee outer suburban schools, and 2 are high-fee schools. 2 are also all-girls schools. Schools in less advantaged communities, including Dandenong, St Albans, Springvale and Braybrook registered heavily in the top 20, including the school with the best NAPLAN results in the state. The Australian Curriculum Assessment and Reporting Authority, ACARA's ranking of Victorian school NAPLAN results is based on those that achieved the highest and most consistent rate of progress in literacy and numeracy. Dandenong North Primary, a public school in Melbourne's southeast where 70% of pupils are classified as disadvantaged, has the best NAPLAN results in Victoria. Data from ACARA shows. It is the only school in the state where the students in all year levels that were tested made progress that was well above average every year that NAPLAN was conducted between 2019 and 2022 in all five domains: reading, writing, spelling, grammar, and numeracy. The NAPLAN results for 2022 were published on the My School website last Wednesday, along with information on each school's profile, population, and attendance levels last year. Australian students sit NAPLAN in years 3, 5, 7, and 9, and their results and progress in the standardised test are compared against other similar students around the country. Ordinarily, students' progress in the five fields would have been assessed by comparing their results last year with the results in 2020. But the standardised tests of students' literacy and numeracy proficiency was cancelled in 2020, prompting ACARA to assess last year's NAPLAN results over three of the past 4 years to identify the top performing schools. Glenn Fay, Education Program Director at the Centre for Independent Studies, said it should not be surprising that government schools filled most of the places on the list. He said state schools routinely performed as well as or better than non-government schools on standardised tests such as NAPLAN and PISA. At a macro level, one of the unspoken findings in the data year on year is that government schools do hold their own on average, Fay said. State schools do really well, and unfortunately that gets sometimes buried in simplistic analysis. But when you compare similarly advantaged schools, I think public schools on the whole can be really proud of their efforts. Julie Sonneman, the education lead at Impact Economics, said research into student progress had found that once a student's background was factored in, there was minimal difference in performance between public and private schools. Previous research she conducted for the Grattan Institute found the average progress made by students in private schools was about 1 month greater than that of public school students over 2 years at primary school level and 2 months greater in secondary schools. When you control for socioeconomic status, there is minimal value add in terms of the extra learning that happens in non-government schools, Sonneman said. Dandenong North Primary Principal Paul Hilton credited the school's strong results to consistent leadership, data-driven explicit teaching, tutoring, intervention and extension programs. He said the school also sought to be a second home for students. Of the 811 students at the school, 89% come from non-English speaking backgrounds, including 38% from Afghanistan. Over the past 5 years, on average, about 95% of Year 3 and 5 students have sat NAPLAN, as some students enter the school with limited English and go through an intensive 12-month English program, Hilton said. He said the school was lucky to be well-funded with lots of intervention and extension programs. Prep to Year 3 students who are below benchmark reading levels can go through their language factory, which is 45 minutes a day focusing on phonics and decoding words. Braybrook College in Melbourne's West has a near identical profile to Dandenong North, with 85% of students from non-English speaking backgrounds and 80% of students classified as disadvantaged. It was the best secondary school in the state in NAPLAN testing between 2019 and 2022. Principal Kelly Panusieris said the school poured extra time and resources into its students' English literacy. Every Year 7 and Year 8 student is required to take 4 dedicated literacy classes a week on top of standard English classes. We have children who are refugee children, so once they leave school, they don't pick up a book, or certainly not a book in English, Panusieris said. The school's low socioeconomic status entitles it to more equity funding, and it directs this money to literacy and a numeracy centre, where students are struggling in maths attend lunchtime sessions. That article really goes to show how silly it is about the parents flocking to private schools, especially when you see how well the public schools are doing with the results. Obviously, if the parents are flocking to private schools, as we heard earlier in the program, then they are not going to get value for money, especially when 16 of the top 20 schools in NAPLAN results are public schools.
Every week on the Doctor Program, we have a special segment to show a different state school is a great school.
State schools are great schools.
School of the week. State school.
School of the week. Great state schools.
State schools. School of the week. School for the week here on the Dogs Program.
And this week's Great State School of the Week is Perambin Primary College, the Violet Town campus. Perambin Primary College was established in 1995, combining a number of primary schools to form four campuses, Battagini, Strathbogie, Swanpool, and Violet Town. The campuses are set in unique natural environments where students can learn in their local community. The multi-campus college is unique and they operate from three of the four campuses on a week-to-week basis. They have 75 students attending across these three campuses with 11 school staff members, including art, library, and specialist health, physical education, and wellbeing teacher. Each of the school campus grounds have access to native bushland and they're surrounded by a supportive community. Many students that attend the campuses live locally and tend to walk or ride their bike to school. There's also a bus service for each campus. Perambin Primary College has developed close ties to the community and enjoys support from the local shops and community services. They welcome students from all cultural backgrounds with a range of learning needs. The school population is predominantly from families with British heritage. However, some cultural diversity is reflected in a small number of families with Maori, Indian, Vietnamese and Koori heritage. They strive to provide a nurturing and challenging environment that empowers students to reach their personal best, both academically and socially. The Violet Town campus, situated in Tulip Street, has two classes composed of Foundation and Year 1 and 2 and 3, and Years 4 and 5 and 6. There are small numbers in each class, ensuring that teaching is individualised for the needs of each student. The campus provides all of the programs provided by Perambin Primary College, with specialist teachers for Indonesian, Information Communication Technologies, ICT, music and library. Students are able to use iPads, netbooks and desktop computers in every classroom, each of which is equipped with interactive whiteboards. Video conferencing equipment is also available, which is used to facilitate inter-class contact and lessons across campuses. One of the features of the campus is the community vegetable garden on the east side of the school. It's a great place for the students to learn about sustainable planting and to help out with the maintenance of the garden beds. Parents and friends of the campus are very welcome to come to the veggie garden and join in on the work there. The grounds of the campus are spacious, with a netball and basketball court, a football oval and playground equipment, and a cubby. The rear classrooms have a large covered deck which can accommodate all students from four campuses on shared days. The campus is across the road from the local swimming pool, which greatly simplifies the intensive swimming program in February each year. The facilities in the town are excellent for prospective families, with a kindy just around the corner from the school. Now some facts and figures. The school has 60 pupils. Its ICSEA value is 974, which is well below the average of 1,000. The students are, this is a small rural community. 10% of students have parents from the highest income quartile, 14% from the second highest, 30% from the third quartile, and 46% from the poorest 25% of the community. Only 3% of the pupils speak a language other than English, and 7% are of Indigenous parentage. It costs the taxpayer $29,300, well above the Gonski resource standard, to educate a child at this school. for it is not worth the private sector going into small country towns to educate students. The school receives only $428,000 from the federal government and $1.7 million from the state government, $10,800 in fees and $84,800 from private fundraising. The capital grants in the last 3 years has only been $157,000. All this public and private money is money well spent. The NAPLAN results indicate the children in this school are progressing very well indeed. So congratulations to the dedicated staff at this school in Violettown. Congratulations to Perambran Primary College.
Well, congratulations to all of our dedicated teachers who are doing such a wonderful job in our public system. And we offer our condolences to all of those private school parents who are wasting their money running off to overpriced private institutions. And we also congratulate those people up there in Violettown and up in the north of Victoria. With all of the floods and the bushfires and what have you, those children and those teachers are still doing a marvellous job. But from Dale and from Sorrel and from Maddie and from Kim and from myself, our time is gone and it's bye for now.
I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died, says he. In Salt Lake City, Joe, says I, him standing by my bed. They framed you on a murder charge, says Joe, but I'm dead. Says Joe, but I'm dead. The copper bosses killed you, Joe. They shot you, Joe, says I. Takes more than guns to kill a man, says Joe, I didn't die. Says Joe, I didn't die. And standing there as big as life and smiling with his eyes, says Joe, what they can never kill, went on to organize, went on to organize. From San Diego up to Maine, in every mine and mill, where workers strike and organize, it's there you'll find your hill. It's there you'll find. I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died, says he. I
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.